It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, so Coke Zero, it doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
Yes. And this is weird. I've known about it beforehand because I'm, you know, in the know on soft drink stuff.
Okay.
But now they're even doing commercials. It's now Coke Zero Sugar. But unlike the shit with Pepsi Max, where Pepsi Max is not like Pepsi One Calorie, or whatever, but it's the same stuff, this is legitimately different. They're like, this is a different taste. Apparently it's a different thing. But it's replacing Coke Zero.
What was Coke Zero anyway?
Coke Zero, oh, I've talked about it. This is a big deal. Okay. Wow, okay. I didn't know we were going to get in depth here. I apologize for podcast listeners who can remember when we've talked about this before. I think it's come up a couple times.
We did?
So, like, 1985, I think, New Coke comes out.
Well, yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Maybe 84, whatever. Panned. Terrible.
Mm-hmm.
However, at the same time, the first ever Diet Coke comes out. Prior to that, there was no such thing as Diet Coke. There was Tab, which was a calorie-free soft drink that Coke made.
Okay.
But there was no Diet Coke.
Okay.
And so the Diet Coke is, in fact, Diet New Coke. But since it's the first one, they don't call it that. It's just Diet Coke.
Oh, really? Diet Coke tastes like New Coke?
Yes. Diet Coke is Diet New Coke.
I did not know that.
And people liked it. They didn't like New Coke. So New Coke goes away. This sticks around. So Coke Zero comes around. And at first I was like, is it with Splenda or whatever? No. Coke Zero was Diet Coke Classic, which, funnily enough, meant it tasted like Tab.
Huh.
But so now it's gone, and I'm a little bit pissed about this. The only thing I love Coke Zero. The only thing I don't like about Coke Zero is it's fairly low caffeine, which shouldn't, I mean, it's fine if I'm just drinking, but frequently when I'm drinking those, the caffeine intake is part of it.
Okay.
And so it was like maybe even less than Diet Pepsi, but Diet Pepsi does not have a lot itself. Coke has much more. It's not like Mountain Dew, but it has a lot. So anyway, this happens. I'm stuck at home in my 2 weeks of hell, which I'll talk about shortly. And I say to Trish one time, she's like, I'm stopping by the store, do you need anything? I'm like, if you see this Coke Zero Sugar, bring me one. Because I want to check it out. That's what I do. Burger King has a new sandwich, I go taste it, you know? And so I get it, I taste it. And I think I know what they changed.
What's that?
Well, here's the thing. It tastes almost exactly the same. Like, if you blind tasted me, I suspect I could tell they were two different drinks. I don't know, I could tell you which was which. If you just handed it to me blindfold, I'd say that Coke Zero. But the caffeine intake is up to the same levels as Diet Coke now.
But it still has no sugar.
Still no sugar. And people say, like, the pop companies always say we add caffeine because it helps the flavor. They really do it because it makes it super addictive. But it does actually affect the flavor. If you ever get, like, caffeine-free Coke, it definitely tastes a little different. So I am pretty sure this is just Coke Zero with more caffeine in it. And I find that hilarious. So, also, for me, I'm happy.
So Coke Zero isn't really gone.
They said Coke Zero is now Coke sugar-free with a new taste. And they were claiming it was, like, a new thing. But I think the new thing is Coke Zero plus some more caffeine.
Interesting.
Because it tastes very similar, and it's literally the amount has it matches Diet Coke exactly. It's 57 grams per 20 ounces. I feel a little sad that I can just pull that number out of the air. A little bit, but not too bad. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that cares enough to remind you to update all the firmware on all of your folding chairs, or else your Equifax credit data may be leaked.
Yeah.
So, it's more than just the computer. Your chairs, pets,
dishwasher.
As near as I can tell, I never realized it's one of the three major credit companies, but apparently Equifax is just one dude standing on a rooftop screaming out numbers at random. Had no idea that was a thing. So, yeah, that's like the one piece of news I know from the last 2 weeks. Well, because, okay, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 341.
And just to give people a little background here, I mean, you know we had a mystery episode last week. That's because I fucked up my back again, because that's kind of my jam. Okay, it's been too long. I've done this. All right, let's go to the basics. Here's how the show works for those of you who just joined us for the first time. Now you know I fuck up my back, really. And Coke Zero Sugar is just Coke Zero, more caffeine. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks like yourselves, cool people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little... Why are you trying not to laugh? Did I do it wrong?
No.
You're wondering what those grapes are doing there.
No, I'm reading. You've got a vacuum cleaner box.
Shop vac box, yes.
Yeah, and it. I'm just reading that it's got, you know, in English, utility vac, new, you know, and then it's got in Spanish, then it's got in French, and I don't know why, it's just amusing.
Sometimes it is, like, what does that translate into? Anyway, people write into this email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its emaciated, terribly, terribly emaciated servants, draw those note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show. So anyway, 2 weeks ago today, in fact, we did the podcast, 2 weeks ago today, I went to the gym, and I was doing relatively, I was doing core work, I was doing some stretches, simple stuff, and I get up at the end, and my back's wrenched or something. I'm like, what the heck? But I've been discovering through personal experience and reading up, when it's possible, best thing for that is to try and keep it moving and things.
Sure.
Bed rest is if, like, things are fucked and you can't walk and things like that. So I kind of just go through the day. I mean, I went to work and everything. I took a leave or whatever. And it's not bad. By the end of the day, I don't feel it. And I don't even think I talked about it on the podcast. I mean, it was that little thing. Maybe I did. I don't know. But I go to bed. It's fine. Friday morning, wake up. Can't walk. Can't take like 3 steps. Everything is seized up. Which happened, you'll recall, a couple months ago. And I laid in bed for a couple days and took some muscle relaxers, and then I was pretty okay. Not so much this time. That Friday, I was in bed all day. I didn't even eat or drink or anything. I just lay in bed all day. Because it really hurt and it was awful. That Saturday morning, it was still so bad that we went to the ER.
Yeah.
And they said, you got some spasms. Here's some stuff. Go home. Went home, took the stuff, laid in bed some more. Still sucked. Maybe even was getting a little worse.
Wow.
So by Sunday afternoon, we go back to the ER. And they're like, okay, it's probably a herniated disc. It's probably not just muscles. But they do all the things to check to make sure your brain works. You know, push on my hand with your foot, pull up,
sure,
and all
sure.
That jazz. Nothing like that. I'm not having any weird... It's not like with the surgery, like, no bodily functions are doing their own business or anything like that. So, like, it's probably not a thing. You may just have to rest a few days. So they gave me some more drugs, including shot some into my arm, but sent me home with some. And as luck would have it, Thursday, a week ago, I was already meeting with my doctor. So I'm at home. I'm in bed all week. Go to the doctor. Things are still bad. I can't sit in chairs. I have to, like, lay on the table. And on my side. It always has to be on either side, but I can't lay on my back or my stomach. That hurts, too. And so he gives me some different drugs and is like, take next week off, come back in a week, and we'll see again. So yesterday was kind of the turn. I don't know. Yesterday, on fewer drugs, I was able to sit up more. I was able to actually do a couple things around the house. It was pretty nice. Today, even better. Went to the doctor. We're good. I'll start again Monday. Just half days to begin with because I'm not... I just finished taking the last of the prescriptions. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know for sure what I'll be like not on meds. Right. And also, I'm like, I'll go into work and I'll be fine. And after, like, 3 hours, I'll be like, holy crap, I'll be dead. Like, so I wanted to, just in case.
Right.
Because I haven't been continuing this for a while. But I got to say, and I'm going to do a little pity party here, but I feel like I've earned it over the last couple of weeks. This was hellish.
Yeah.
This was so much worse than even the, like, what, the 6 weeks I was recovering from surgery?
Mm-hmm.
So much worse. And some of that was the pain basically went away the day after surgery. But, I mean, this... I wasn't just, like, stuck in the... I was stuck in my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stuck in my bed on my side. Always on my side. So, like, no sitting up in bed,
mm-hmm.
things like that. I would try and, like, read my Kindle or mess on the phone. And, you know, your arms get tired of holding them and stuff. So exhausted. I couldn't bathe. I couldn't keep myself clean. I dreaded just going to the bathroom, both because I couldn't keep myself clean and because it hurt to get up and move around. And just weeks of this, and nobody's here. Trish is working. She comes home at lunch when she can and stuff. But coincidentally, Trish is going through some... probably what'll end up being some of the highest stress points in her career ever.
Wow.
Right now, that I'm certainly not going to talk about. But, like, stuff is happening there. And we're each other's supports, and we can't do crap for either of each other.
Yeah.
And it's awful. Last weekend, I eventually just broke down over the whole thing. But, yeah, just terrible. I mean, it's not... if I could have gotten to the couch and just, like, watch TV and play video games or whatever, fine. But no, I just was in there. I played so many phone games. I read some terrible books. I watched a lot of movies because I took my laptop in there, and so I would watch Netflix and stuff like that. But and the whole time I'm drugged.
Yeah.
Like, for the whole time I'm doped up. And not even, like, fun drugs, just doped up. So just everything's a little off. So, yeah, that's been terrible, and I feel so great now that I'm just, like, I can sit in a chair.
Yep.
I can. Today I went outside to go to the doctor, but still, like, other than ER visits and doctor visits, I haven't been outside this house in 2 weeks. Like, I'm so sick of this house. I don't know what's going to happen tonight. It's really hot tonight, so that room, the family room, gets really hot, but I'm like, if Trish wants to hang out in the bedroom, that's fine. I want to stay away from that bedroom. I'm tired of that bedroom.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have not done much, but it also means I'm behind on what's happening in the world, but I'm also very carefully... relearning, because if it's already passed, I don't want to know. Like, whatever crazy shit the president did that isn't still happening or isn't still gonna happen, I don't want to know. I don't need the empty stress calories. so the bits that, like, are still out there, like DACA, I got it, but I'm like, I'm setting out, like, he's not gonna do shit with that for months now, so we can stop talking about that. Other thing, I think there have been a couple of social ones that were ridiculous, but I'm like, they're past already. I don't want to know. The Equifax one's probably gonna stick around, stuff like that. So, working all that out, but trying to avoid current events that I don't need to know,
yeah.
because they always suck.
Just be an avalanche.
So I haven't been able to play a video game, so I still haven't finished Assassin's Creed Syndicate, although I'm really close now. I would not be surprised if I finished it tonight.
Oh.
And it's been very fun, but I am glad to be done, and I don't think I'm going to start a new game. The next game I would play will be Final Fantasy XV, but I think I'm going to make myself finish the draft of the book first.
Well, that's exciting.
Did I mention I already know what my next series of books is going to be?
Yes.
Yeah, that's still there. I'm getting... too excited about that. Kind of like, I want to get this one out of the way. I'm bored with this one. Because it's also very different, and so I'm very excited about that. I do have one film I want to talk about.
Okay.
I saw a movie. Actually, I have a couple. Trish and I watched a movie called The Last Laugh that was a documentary. And we have this obsession with documentaries about stand-up and about comedy. And they all have their one little thing that they hang it on, you know. Oh, it's about, but they're all basically the same movie. But they're still fun. You just watch comedians talking about comedy. That's absolutely our thing. So, and we watched one that was called Dying Laughing that kind of sucked, actually. But we watched one called The Last Laugh, and it's basically an exploration of making humor regarding the Nazis and the Holocaust. Mm. And some of it, I mean, Mel Brooks was in it quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Some of it was about where the line was. Some of it was also about a lot of Holocaust survivors talking about what role that kind of stuff played in fucking surviving the Holocaust. Sure. And what it plays now. It was not a feel-good movie, although it was pretty funny in places. I told Trisha, because I had just finished, I also listened to a recording of The Graveyard Book by Neil Gaiman, mm-hmm. which I've now read in like four different forms. and I think I may have solidly decided now that might be my favorite book, full stop. Mm. That book. I'm thinking of several people I'm going to buy it for now. But I had forgotten the ending is very sad. And I'm in the bed and I'm drugged up and I've been listening to it for it. So like I'm literally weepy at the end of this ending. And I'm like, we should watch something tonight that's cheerier. So my wife picked the goddamn Holocaust joke movie. but it wasn't, it didn't like make me cry or anything, so it was okay. But it was very interesting, and so I think I would recommend that. But that's not what I want to talk about. The other day I watched a movie. Maybe I shouldn't have seen. I don't know. I'm not recommending this movie to anyone. I'm going to tell you about this movie, and people out there are going to decide for themselves if they want to see this movie. Most of them will not. It is a horror movie.
Okay.
It's on Netflix right now. It's called A Dark Song. It's Welsh, which I find interesting. Like, it was made in Wales. It's... there's two main characters, and I think one of them is from... It's set in Wales, and that character's Welsh, and the other one had come there. But, so there's Welshness involved. It's a really horrific movie. Very hard to watch. But it's fascinating, and I think it's doing something I've never seen a movie do before. The movie is essentially about a woman whose child died young, and she wants to speak to the child again. And she wants to do that via this very elaborate and dangerous occult ritual of which she has read up.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to find someone to do this for, somebody who is qualified. And she's on this, like her fifth guy or whatever, but this is the guy who ends up doing it. And it's a huge undertaking. Like, they're going to seal themselves in this house, which she has purchased based on very specific requirements in order to be able to do this. And they're going to essentially be stuck, just the two of them, in there for, like, up to a year because of how this works.
Hmm.
And it's... the reason it's fascinating is it's just this... I mean, the whole thing is a very psychological fucked-up-ness thing, but it's a real deep dive into the concepts of Western occultism. And I don't mean you will learn a lot about occultism. I mean, this is a real look at people, at somebody practicing this stuff. And it's, like, serious. Like, it takes days to prepare. And there's bits where, like, they've drawn all the etchings out on the chalk, in chalk in the room, and there's all the circles and everything. And he's like, you kneel in this one. All right, you use the bathroom, right? She's like, yeah, okay. So you kneel there. You're going to look at the stone. You're going to think about blah, blah, blah for 2 days without eating or drinking or moving from that spot. When you are done, we will have a small break for rest and food, and then we will do the other two rooms also for 2 days each. And it's this kind of thing, and it's I think the best way I put it was explaining it last night to Trish. It's giving occult ritualism the Watchmen treatment. It's like, if this was real shit that people were doing and they were real serious about it and stuff like that, it would really be this dark, gritty, and at times very mundane, at other times very random sort of thing. And I mean, the two of them go, like, they hate each other in parts, and but they're really bonded in this whole thing, and it's insane. And it's creepy as hell. There's plenty, because that's the thing, is the process, according to the guy who's running it or whatever, is that they go through these things, and slowly other worlds start to take notice of them because they are doing these strange things. Mm. And so you get that throughout the movie. But, I mean, and you know, the stuff where, like, we have this pyramid structure, you're going to kneel under it, and I'm going to pour cold water on you for, like, 3 hours, and you just have to, you know, the serious shit. And that was fascinating, because I've never seen anybody take that tack before. And it's, I think it's a good quality movie. It has at least a couple of scenes that I'm not going to say they should not have put in their movie. I would have been happier if they had not put them in their movie. But so, if you are, I mean, if any of that sounds intriguing, check it out. It's pretty intense. And I just wanted to speak about it, and that's why I got a podcast, so I can get away with this shit.
Why would you not recommend it?
Because it's really disturbing. Oh. I mean, it's not a fun horror movie. Like there's a lot of horror movies I'm like, oh, you guys should watch this. This is ridiculous. Like, the people are such shitty actors, and the devil, like, you can tell where his makeup's, like, that kind of thing, you know. There's lots of reasons to watch horror movies. And someone like, oh, you get a little spook, oh, jump scares, you know, some people, like, this is not that. This is a hardcore, emotionally draining, dark thing. It does, to its credit, have an arc to it, like, it's not just sort of nihilistic at the, oh, and everybody dies. And like, there's a message. It's not a super deep, but, like, shit happens at the end. You're like, oh, and then things happen. But, yeah, I mean, well, it's like, you know, the other time I did something like this was The Devil's Chair, I recommended. But I'm like, if you just want a really fucked up horror movie. But that one was, this is just a real horrific, lots of blood and guts, very horror. This one is more psychological, but it's the same sort of thing. There's stuff in here that people will find, many people would find unappealing, unappetizing, unwanted, and unuseful, and you definitely should not, and I would not blame you for that. If you want that visceral horror experience, and it sounds like something, oh man, 2 hours just fucking with my head about this stuff, then go for it. Keep in mind, this review is brought to you by a guy who was on at least 2 prescription meds when watching it, possibly more. So keep that in mind. But again, the concept and the reality with which they seem, like, I believe that if there are people out there trying to hire people to do black magic, like, this is the shit that it's like. And it's like, it was like even grittier Constantine. Like, take Hellblazer and take all the charisma out of John Constantine. Make him a fat, red-bearded Welshman in a tracksuit. Like, that's what we're dealing with here. And yeah, it's fucked up, but it's very interesting. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm like so animated talking to you. I mean, even more than usual, you don't get to say much. I'm just, like, sitting upright and talking with another person that's not my wife is, like, unbelievable to me right now.
Sure.
I'm gonna go to sleep just terrified tomorrow. It's like not gonna work or anything. But Trish has almost all of tomorrow off. I'm still not going to work tomorrow, so we have like a solid 3 days for me to make sure I can toddle around without any meds, and to hopefully start cleaning up the house. Like, yeah, we need to do that. So how have your 2 weeks been? Oh, one other thing. Have you seen the trailer, the real trailer for The Disaster Artist?
Yes.
See, now, there was never a way I was not going to see the movie. No chance that wasn't happening. That trailer makes me way more interested in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Because the first trailer was just them filming a scene from the movie The Room, and it was funny, but it's like, yeah. That's basically how I expect. This one, I'm like, no, this is, because this is a thing. I mean, Greg Sestero likes to spin it, but this is sort of what happened, is this wannabe actor found this other lunatic wannabe actor, and they became buds, and things happen. And so the trailer looks really, to me, like, this is a story I'm curious about. The other one is just like watching, you know, movie outtakes for 2 hours, which is fine. And like I said, no way I wasn't going to see it. But this one, I'm like, I might learn some shit from this. What did you think?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen The Room.
Okay, well, yeah, that ruins the whole thing. I can lend it to you.
I find all this stuff I see about this movie to be really interesting and fascinating. And it makes me want to see The Room. I didn't have any real interest in seeing it before. Just a bad movie.
You remind me, the DVD is literally in there. I'll just hand it to you on the way out.
But this movie looks good.
And that's the thing. Okay, now I got another one to talk about. I saw another movie that is worth mentioning. I've been really on the Riff Tracks guys. I've been watching a lot of Riff Tracks stuff and Mystery Science Theater stuff. And I think some of that is the fake socialization. Like, I'm watching a movie with these guys and we're making fun of it. Like, in my head, I'm pretty sure that's what it was. But I found that I liked the live ones better. I mean, they're not live now, but, like, when they did the ones where they would broadcast them to the theaters and stuff, they would tape those and show those. And I kind of liked that, the audience feedback and stuff. So I've been watching a lot of those. And so I was down to, the only one left available was Birdemic Shock and Terror. You familiar with this movie?
No.
This is one of the new candidates for worst movie of all time. And I'd seen the clips. Like, I know it's just awful. But, like, you know what else is awful? Sharknado. I don't want to see Sharknado. We've talked about this. Like, you can't be in on the joke. Or it's not a bad movie when you were like, we're going to make a bad movie. Right, it's going to be fun. Right. I don't give a fuck about that. I want the ones, and The Room is the one where this is for real. this is my art. This book I've been writing, if I give it to you guys and it's the dumbest, most incoherent thing ever, that's hilarious. That's what I'm talking about here. And not just hilarious, fascinating. I'm like, I want to know the thought process. Well, I, at some point, I think because of just the glaring obviousness when you see scenes from it, had assumed Birdemic was sort of in the Sharknado camp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
No?
No. Everybody involved thought they were making a real movie. They were wrong. They were so wrong. I don't say this a lot, and I would certainly never say this about The Room, because there's so many twists and turns there. No one else could make The Room but Tommy Wiseau. Someone said, I could make a better movie than Birdemic. In a heartbeat. Anyway, my cats could make a better movie than Birdemic. But everybody on board thinks it's for reals. So it's pretty awesome to watch. And also, it's kind of like a tourist video for Half Moon Cay, California.
Okay.
Like, it's set in this town, and they use, like, an actual parade from the town, scenes at the real Harvest Festival for this town. Like, they did a bunch of stuff where they were just like, the town's already doing this, let's film there and have some people do some lines. So that's amazing. Yeah, it was crazy. But so yeah, I did see Birdemic as well. But no, I forgot you haven't seen The Room. No, you gotta see it, because that's my religion, is The Room. Like, I don't...
Your religion.
And the only thing to go on, you gotta be prepared. A lot of people walk out in the middle of this movie. And not because it's offensive, just because it's bad. It has offensiveness stuff in it, but it's like if you hear a 3-year-old toss an F-bomb in church, like, you can't get mad. I mean, you tell them, don't do that, but it's not like, you can't be, what the heck is wrong? No, they don't know any better, and it's kind of cute, and it's kind of funny. The whole movie is an F-bomb in church from a 3-year-old. But the other thing is, you just have to keep in your head, this was on purpose. And, like, imagine that.
They thought what they were making was good.
This guy thought, I mean, this movie started out, I believe, as a 5,000-word novel. This movie also, well, you've seen it in, you've seen the bit in the trailer where he's like, Johnny is an American hero, he's got a great body and good friends, and maybe he's a vampire, we'll talk about that later. That is a legit thing. When he wrote that character, he wanted that character to be a vampire for no reason. And at the end, the character was going to fly off in his car as proof that he was a vampire. There's going to be no mention of him being a vampire the rest of the movie. But that's what was going to happen. But they didn't have the budget. Yeah. Remind me. I'm going to get that for you on the way out. Because, yeah, it'll change your life.
Change my life.
I've been thinking
about it. I don't know if I want again. My life
changed. Yeah, no, there will be 2 points. Before you saw The Room, after you saw The Room.
Okay.
It's amazing. So, yeah, back to your 2 weeks. How was your 2 weeks?
Oh, it's fine. We saw It.
You really did? Whoa!
You know, my wife, she used to be a Stephen King fan. I say used to be. I mean, I suppose she still is. But we went and saw it.
All right. I want your take on this.
Okay.
Not on that. I'm going to ask you about that later. But first, I want something else here.
Okay.
So, haven't read any Stephen King.
Really? You have never read any Stephen King?
For years, just couldn't, because I was scared of horror stuff. I didn't read any horror. Couldn't touch it.
I mean, I never have either, but that
and
makes
then
sense for me.
Was going to do Dark Tower,
mm-hmm.
but was waiting for it to be done,
mm-hmm.
which ended up taking 20,000 years. And by that time, I was like, is how many books and how many pages? And one day I was like, fuck it, and I just went to Wikipedia and read it. It still took me like a week, and I still don't really understand what's happening, so I feel like I'm safe on that. But anyway, I don't even think I saw the original It, like, for reals, because I was too scared of that shit back then. I've seen bits from it. I know the story.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, I don't know the story from the book, because I learned, not in this recent iteration, but I learned it came up a year or two ago in places. The book, It,
mm-hmm.
has an impromptu sewer orgy of nothing but children.
Yeah, which is something I didn't know until about a week ago.
And, yeah, there's a point, there's all the characters, they're kids, they're like, I believe they range like 11 to 13. One of them is a girl, and I've read the passage explaining it,
mm-hmm.
and apparently they're just all in the dark, and they're terrified, and she gets this idea to basically distract everybody with
they're
sex.
They're lost.
Okay.
They're lost, so...
But this is, essentially, it's a morale, fighting off the fear kind of team building for like...
As I understand it, because... This is something I didn't know until about a week ago.
Yeah.
Because I was curious, okay, well, I'll watch this movie. What's in the book that's not a movie? And this is there's several things, but this is the one thing everybody wants to talk about.
Yeah, and it wasn't in the last one either. But for some reason, it's like people didn't know about it
back then. I'd never even heard that it was in the book.
Yeah, it was a year or two ago. I think it was a correct article of scenes removed from movies that were probably a good idea, and this was the first one.
In fact, when I first saw an article about it, I thought, someone's making this up.
Right?
So I had to look at several places to find out that, nope, this is in there. And that Stephen King defended it by saying something like, well, you know, it wasn't really about the sex, and... You know, people are a lot more sensitive about that kind of thing now. I'm thinking, really? They're more sensitive now than they were back then? But anyway, so what I understand, how I understand...
I mean, they are more sensitive, but that would have been far in enemy territory even back then. That would have been fucking insane.
And anyone who's...
Then again, every single V.C. Andrews book ever, so...
And my wife is questioning whether or not she's actually read it. She thought she did. She's questioning whether or not she actually read it.
I think people block this part out.
She did not remember that at all.
I have had that experience with people who did read it. I think people block it out. And to be fair, it's not long, and it's not particularly explicit,
graphic,
I don't believe.
No, no.
But it's incontrovertible what's happening.
Right, right. So, yeah, my wife is saying, gosh, maybe I didn't read the book, because she's pretty sure she read every Stephen King book, but she does not remember that. And she thinks she would have remembered. Okay, so we're talking about it. And I'm reading in these articles that what's the thing is, in the books, the kids actually have some powers in a way, that they can kind of pool together to fight the entity. And then when the entity has been taken care of or whatever, their powers diminish. And someone's power was like a way to get through the sewers, and now their power is waning, so now they're lost.
Okay.
So this is her idea to get everybody's powers back in a way. No explanation for why she should even think that could work.
Yeah.
But it does, apparently, and then it helps them get out of the sewers.
And
that's my understanding of it, plot-wise.
We're all going to have to hold with me here, because this is not... I'm going to choose my words extremely carefully here. I remember being... age, you know, 11 to 13. I believe 13 is the top end. I don't remember.
I think
sure
most of the boys are supposed to be 11. I mean, yeah. I think she's a little older than them is what
I remember being in that age range.
Yeah.
And I know for me, not for everyone, but for many in that age range, I was feeling what Dan O'Brien from Cracked coined this term, and I love this term to explain this aspect of puberty, furiously horny. Just all the time. Just, like, always horny and, like, not even happy about... Like, not even enjoying it, but just constant look at boners and shit like that. Like, puberty was just a disaster in that area. So, oddly, I'm willing to believe the feasibility that if somehow there's a terrible situation, it's dark and everybody's lost, and it's just like early teens kids, something like that could break out in a moment of just needing human comfort kind of thing. Weirdly, I feel like I could... I mean, obviously, I wouldn't want it to, and I certainly wouldn't want to know about it if it did, but I feel like that... But I'm just like... But yeah, you would... Why would you put that in the book?
I don't know.
And which was going to be my thing to you. I'm like, what do you think he was thinking? Because here's the thing. I don't think he's fooling us. I don't think he's like, yeah, I'm kind of pedophilic. I'm just going to snick it
no,
in
no,
here.
No, no, no. It's nothing like that.
I think he believes there's a legitimate...
Oh, yeah, I do too. I'm
just
sure
not sure what he believes
right.
is.
Yeah, I don't... If I don't,
I'm very curious what he believes that is.
I think it would be wrong for someone to say, oh, he's just some sick guy or... No. There's...
No, because this would be a weird way to it, even if you were.
This was an idea that he had that, when he had it, seemed perfect to make perfect sense to him. And not only that, but let's remember here, he did put it in the book.
Yeah.
The book is still immensely popular.
Yep.
The TV adaptation, early TV adaptation with Tim Curry or whatever, yeah. immensely popular.
Didn't have
so it. So it's not like, not only did he come up with this idea, and from his experience it was very organic and natural, and it worked in the book in a very organic and natural way, but it didn't hurt the book.
For some reason.
It See, probably didn't happen either,
scarier.
But it didn't hurt it.
I find that scarier. So, but, like, it just didn't write it
well,
up.
What
but
I'm,
again,
what I'm, saying
I'm reminded of V.C. Andrews. There's some weird shit in V.C. Andrews.
It makes me wonder if we read it, particularly someone like you or me or Jazz, for example, who we understand a little bit of how storytelling and literature works. If we read it, we might go, oh, okay, I get it. Because there's things earlier in the book, or there's this, or there's
or
that.
Or if you just are sort of gloss over. I think I've talked before where there's things that I read when I was younger that had some pretty messed up scenes in them, but they were very short, and I was young, and it didn't really sink in. So it wasn't until years later that somebody's like, don't you remember that rape scene in that? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Because
well,
it's just like, I was young, and it didn't matter, and it was short, so I just sort of went on.
Well, and even if we would read it and understand it, it doesn't mean we'd think it was good or the right decision. It would just be like, okay, now I see why he did that.
Yeah.
I still don't think it's a good idea, but... at least I get where it's coming
from.
But
I do find some of that still... Because I remember, I'm still the guy who probably won't see the new Kingsman movie, even though I really want to, because I can't get over that last 10 seconds from the previous one. So I feel like something like this would have put me off the guy forever.
Well, then, see, that's what my wife thinks. But here's the thing about all of that. Whatever the reason is, like, if you read it and you... realized, okay, I see how this has worked in.
Yeah.
I can pretty much guarantee you, and I know a lot of people are probably not going to think it's right for me to say this, not having read it, but from things I know about Stephen King's work, and I know about Stephen King and all this other stuff, and based on other things I know out that's completely unrelated to Stephen King, whatever the reason is, I can pretty much guarantee you that it's probably a really horrible sexist reason.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably no getting away from that.
Yeah.
Because here's one...
To be fair, you could have used that preamble for anything in the world.
But here's, and here's one angle of it. I'll bet if you read the book and this scene comes up, you are tempted to think to yourself, this is the reason there is a female member of the Losers Club in the first place. Like, you could just feel like he wrote this book... and then the first draft, he got to this point where he thought, wow, these guys should have an orgy, but there's no girl in the group. Okay, so now I'll have to go back and rewrite, put a girl in, an older girl, to have sex with all of them. And
I know
that'll
it's
make,
horrible,
that'll
but
make
I
sense.
Want that to be it. I want him to go that far and be like, these guys should have an orgy.
These guys need to have sex
right
now.
There's no girl.
Oh, there's no girl, though. Yeah.
Damn. No, actually, and I think the sad thing
go
is...
Go back
I
and
think,
rewrite it.
I think all of this conversation is probably useless because the real reason... is for the time frame and for Stephen King, every word of it was written sky high on cocaine.
Okay, well,
because most of his oeuvre was written sky high on cocaine for decades.
That might be true, but I forgot to mention his big thing that he says about it is that there's so much thematically about innocence being lost and about, you know, kids becoming adults.
Yeah.
In the movie, they made a big deal about this. I don't know if he does in the book, but you know, one of the kids is a Jewish kid, and he's going to have his bar mitzvah and everything. And this is such a theme, you know, that for him, everything just culminated into the point of them all losing their virginity, basically.
Yeah.
It's just part of the whole rite of passage aspect.
You saying that puts me deeper on the cocaine train, because that absolutely sounds like a rant that somebody has to say.
Yeah,
it's,
you know,
all
what?
All about the same
shit. It does kind of.
And like,
does
and kind they have of. Sick, because they're all becoming adults even as their children. Like, that totally sounds like someone do not.
And you got to have sex in there. The
exactly.
Sex
it's
is
all
part
about
of it.
They're being reborn. Yeah, no, that's yeah. I'm just so happy. Right? Well, you said the Jewish kid. Oh, my God. Yeah. Not going to read it, so whatever. How was the movie?
Oh, the movie. Okay, well.
This is a big thing nowadays, because, like, was it Nostalgia Fest? Did they try and go somewhere new? What, like, what happened?
Well, as you might know, the original book, what's going on with the kids is in the late 50s. Mm. Because there are two parts of the book. There's things going on with the kids, and then there's things going on with them as adults.
Yes.
Okay.
Because they kind of defeat the bad guy, in
yeah.
quotes,
and
go away and grow up, and then the bad guy
and
resurfaces.
Then, and the adults, whatever's going on with adults is contemporary. That's why the kids is set in the late 50s. So the
So in this movie, it's set in 2010s.
In this movie, the kids are in like the 70s or 80s or whatever, because the adults
because
are going to be now.
Yeah.
Or whatever, you know
yeah,
what I
yeah,
mean?
No, definitely. Like every time they do a flashback episode in The Simpsons,
yeah.
suddenly the numbers don't add up anymore. They did an entire episode based around that. They did an episode where they were going to tell the story of something, and Lisa's like, I've been crunching the numbers, and there's like a 10-year gap in here. And then it turned out they had to tell the story of when they moved to this one town and shared an apartment, and Marge went to college before they had any kids and stuff like that. Because, yeah, the years didn't match up.
So anyhow, so the time period is different from the book, because whenever they tell the adult story, because this movie was just the kids. It
yeah.
didn't go back and forth.
Yeah.
Just the kids. So
people that they can't relate to, contemporary adults that don't know what yeah. smartphones are.
So when they get to the adults, they want that to be like now.
Yes.
So the kids are in, like I said, the 80s maybe? I don't remember now. So that's one thing. And it's interesting to me that you've never read Stephen King, because just about every single one of my other friends has read Stephen King. Like, and a lot of it too, not just a little.
I fit the profile.
Yeah.
I absolutely fit the profile. It was really a timing thing. It was can't do horror, and then as I got older, I don't know. I also saw enough movies based on his properties, and I tend to not like them. And more specifically, the more involved he is in the making of them, the less I like them.
Right.
Silver Bullet, as I remember it, is a crime against humanity. And I recently saw American Werewolf in London, and I still think Silver Bullet's a crime against. So, like, yeah, and then at a certain point, I'm like, you know what? I mean, I would never go so far as to say Stephen King is not a good writer. I'm like, I'm just not interested.
Right. So that's the thing. For most of my life, I've had friends talking about Stephen King, you know, suggesting maybe I should have a read or whatever. But nothing they've ever told me about Stephen King or his stories ever sounded like it would appeal to me.
Mm-hmm.
Cujo, okay? I'm just not going to find a rabid dog creepy. I'm just not. I can see how other people might,
yeah.
or that if he wrote it a certain way, it would seem that way, but that's just not going to work on me.
And knowing the story now, because I actually now know, before I just kill a dog, whatever, I know the story a little more, I think that would be an interesting short story to read. I have no interest in reading a novel-length version
or seeing
of
a movie maybe based
or,
on it.
Or seeing a movie
exactly.
based
and it just seemed to me that everything people told me about Stephen King and what was great about the stories, it felt so much like what they found, what they loved most about them, were things they were bringing to the experience, right? And what it meant to them.
Yeah.
It's not what he was bringing
to
it.
Well, and I think there was he captured the zeitgeist of a certain demographic of a certain generation, I think was part
maybe,
of it, too.
Maybe. But anyhow, it just has
I
never...
I have the same thing with Heinlein, though. I think there's also a thing of if they become too prolific, I recoil a little bit. Because I've read some Heinlein, but that was another one where it was like, you got to read Heinlein. And I was like, I don't know where to start. Because that and all this connecting them all. Like, Stephen King has tried to make it so that literally all of his writings are in the same universe.
Yeah.
And in fact, The Dark Tower was his way to sort of build a spine to that.
Sure.
And I'm like, no. Because the way my brain works, I'm either learning about that entire universe or I'm skipping it.
Well, that's another thing is that there a lot of things I discovered that were in the that were talked about being in the books that aren't in the film. You can understand why they excluded from the film, because it would be incredibly uninteresting and boring.
It's tie-ins to things that don't exist, movies that don't exist.
And for me, probably reading the book, I'd feel the same way about that. In reading the book, it's like, can we just get past this ridiculous stuff that I don't care about? So I've just always had this feeling that I wouldn't enjoy a Stephen King book even if I tried to read it. I'm sure he writes fine, but it's probably just not my cup of tea.
If he had a short one, I could give it a try.
And like you. Like, I like The Shining, but that's about as removed from the source material as you can possibly get and still be a Stephen King movie.
And it's still... I mean, it's a good movie. And actually, people don't give enough credit for this. In the 90s, they did a miniseries version with Steven Weber, and I'm not going to claim for a second it matches the Kubrick one, but it was pretty good.
Yeah.
It tells a slightly different story. Like, it's a little, in some ways, more to the book and in some ways less to the book. But again, though, I'm like, that's a novel? I feel like that's an interesting short story. And then you move on. But so much of his stuff, I'm just like,
but even
there's not enough plot for me to read 800 pages.
Right. Even The Shining is a film I like for the craft of the film, not so much because I think it's a great ghost story or anything like that.
Honestly, now, I'm having this with so many people lately. I'm having trouble separating art from artists. Knowing the shit Kubrick pulled on Shelley Duvall in that movie has messed up that movie for
me. Yeah.
I'm also on the verge of no longer liking Louis C.K., but that's a different thing. And I hate that because the man's a genius. But.
So I go to it. You know, and everyone's saying it's amazing. And it just...
Is it getting good reviews? I mean, I've been...
Oh, yeah. I mean, tremendous reviews. It's making a lot of money. It's might be the best selling horror movie ever kind of deal. It just didn't do anything for me, and I was kind of bored even during a lot of it.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
certain listeners are going to want to know, how are we on jump scares?
I can't even tell you. I just sort of sat there waiting for it to be over.
Wow. Are you particularly susceptible to jump scares?
I'm not particularly susceptible
to
them,
no.
You're
useless to it.
I'm not particularly susceptible to those. I don't find clowns scary or creepy.
I'm not scared of them. I find them creepy.
If you take a clown and give him creepy features like weird eyes and teeth or whatever, the fact that it is a clown has no bearing on whether or not.
No,
I'm,
it's like you made that clown. You made that clown creepy.
It's just a creepy thing. It's not just a creepy clown.
That might be our episode title. You made that clown creepy.
I mean, and it seems like Bill Skarsgård did a fine job and whatever.
How many Skarsgårds are there?
No, really, it seems like they just
I
keep coming.
I lost interest after Peter, I'm not going to lie.
So I just, and you know how I am with coming-of-age stories anyway.
Yeah.
I don't relate to them, I don't get them. There's not a single character in the thing that I could relate to or care about.
Me either. But you know what's weird? I can relate to growing old stories and have been able to since I was like 8. Like, as a very young kid, I totally got what The Big Chill was about. How the fuck is that possible? But, like, I still don't fully understand Stand By Me. I mean, I get it, but I don't get it.
Hmm.
And this, I think this ties into me really liking Golden Girls and stuff like that. I've always gotten into the heads of old people who aren't sure what they're doing with their life anymore kind of thing. Even when it's, like, 30-something midlife crisis kind of thing.
Sure.
But, yeah, coming of age, psh, no idea.
So it just didn't... I don't know. Honestly, now you know that my experience with Stranger Things was...
I
didn't quite understand
it. I'm still like, I might check out season 2, though.
Oh, we'll watch the second one, because now we're big fans of Millie Bobby Brown, so we'll watch it. But Stranger Things, I understood it. I mean, it didn't do anything for me, but I got it.
It was paint by numbers, yeah.
And it was... I don't even understand what the appeal of this is.
I have never... When I finally had somebody sit me down and explain to me the plot to it the first time, I was like, what? I was like, okay, like, really poorly done loose spoiler for what it's about. So kids in this town find out or get attached to joint whatever. There's a bad thing in the town, and it feeds off of fear, and it can manifest as your fears, and it's really scary, and some kids have to figure it out. And they do it and take care of it, but kind of shittily. So then, like, decades later, they come back and have to do it again, and this time it turns out the thing's just a big old spider, and they kill it by having these magical talismans, which they just slingshot into its stomach, so really could have just been jagged pieces of rock, and then it's over. Like, I'm not saying there are, that that's not an oversimplification, but that's basically the plot of it, right?
I don't know, I guess. I mean, that's what I've always seen.
Yeah. So, as soon as I was like, that's not... So, like, oh, it could be any fear. Oh, we defeated it. No, we didn't quite. Okay, we'll go back. Oh, it's just a big spider. Shoot it with rocks. Yay. Like...
Well, what people's...
It's not about a clown. Another book, the clown is just one of the freaky things.
No, that's right, that's right. And another thing people tell me is that, well, it's really about friendship. It's really about the conquering this thing with the power of imagination and stuff, which... I could be into that, but here's the thing. This film doesn't really do that.
No.
This film doesn't say, okay, you guys, this is about the power of imagination. No, it doesn't do that at all.
No, because if it's horror, you're choking up on the horror. Stand By Me does that, because Stand By Me is not... And that's the thing. I say, like, I don't fully get it. I like Stand By Me. It's a good movie. And if you say that's about, you know, friendship, I'm like, I get that, because there are scenes and dialogue related to that on which we spend time.
Right. Right, right.
If it's a horror, we're like, no, the whole thing is what's scary, what's good. Like, yeah. Well, and maybe the book does it.
I find it kind of interesting that Stranger Things is clearly a total ripoff of Stephen King everything.
Yes. Well, in 80s everything.
And it did it better than this movie did, as far as I'm concerned. Which isn't saying very much, because I'm not a huge fan of Stranger Things, but...
I get this way with remakes. I didn't really care because it, but... There's always that the remake's not going to get what the first one was about. Or, to be fair, is going to consciously choose to make it about something else.
Well, I'm not sure.
That's always
I'm not sure if the concern. Tim Curry one emphasized imagination either.
I don't know. They spent longer. It was like 4 hours or something.
I guess. I mean, in the end of this, they just...
Set up for a sequel?
No. The way they beat the creature is really just to get mad.
All right.
It's like, you're afraid, but turn that fear into violent anger, and that's what you really want to do, kind of thing, and it can't stand
Trump
up to that.
Trump 2020.
And I'm thinking...
I feel like that's literally the slogan Trump Pence 2020. You're afraid, but turn that fear into anger, and you get there.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're a sniveling child, and he's going to get you.
Dude, that's... Speaking of which, can we stop... Have we talked about this before, the new American Horror Story season?
Cult?
Yes.
No, we haven't talked about it.
Okay.
And I haven't seen any of them.
Go real quick. I haven't either. I'm not going to. Don't fucking care.
We'll see it, probably.
The things they're pushing is scary clowns, because that's the thing. Whatever. And it's involved somehow. But it's things go to shit, and everything goes crazy, and there's a cult involved. The inciting factor that starts everything going to shit is literally Donald Trump being elected president.
Really?
Like, yeah, you see the scene... Where they're like, Donald Trump is now the president, and the woman's like, no, and falls on her knees, like, crying. Like, that's literally, like, pushes somebody over the edge, and then shit with clowns happens. And I'm like,
wow.
Fuck yeah. Like, it's not gonna be good, but I almost want to watch it just to validate that somebody's pulling that. And it's not, you know, oh, Ronald K. Dump, or what, no, they're saying Donald Trump, like, literally. I'm like, fuck yes. Anyway, draw something out of the hat. Because we are almost out of time. It's so good, like, to be talking to people. And here's the thing. I've been podcasting for 2 weeks, but I haven't been recording it, so none of you have heard. I'm just lying in bed, like, blearily talking to you guys. So maybe some of you have heard it. But it's so good to talk to the rest of you. And so, yeah. So thank you for...
NeuroDuck? What?
Does it say NeuroDuck? What?
No, that I added the what.
NeuroDuck. What is up,
NeuroDuck? It's been so long.
People, I should say this to people. People have been texting me, checking up on me, and things like that. Thank you. I have not been responding well. Because I just didn't, like, at that point, I felt so awful, and I was in so much pain. I'm like, I don't even want to have to try and be civil to other people. So I was very terse, and I was very minimal. It had nothing to do with you. I was like that with everyone, and I'm sorry. I just sort of had to get through it, because it really sucked, but I'm better now. So, all right, what does NeuroDuck have to say?
What is the difference between a comic book and a graphic novel?
The funny thing is, she already knows the answer to this, and I know she knows the answer to this, because like a month ago at gaming, she asked that, and we all explained it to her.
Mm.
So for the edification of everyone else, you want to hit this one first, or shall I?
I didn't know there was a difference.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay.
Now, it is not a clear line.
I mean, there's an industry difference. Is that what she means?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Well, and here's where it gets into confusion, because those things, we also start tossing around the word trades, and she was like, what are you talking
about? Yeah, right.
So, it gets blurry. There are things where people will argue one way or another. But inherently, a comic book has issues of comic books that come out over a period of time.
That's right. Monthly, bi-monthly, sometimes.
Those comic books, frequently, especially if they are good, will be collected into groups that tell a certain story arc.
An arc, mm-hmm.
That are put into a book that is generally called a trade paperback.
Because usually it is paperback.
Yes, sometimes
it's
hardback.
Right.
But that is what it is. It was not something that was written as a book. It was six issues of a comic that tell one particular story arc that they stuck together.
Right. Then there are things like V for Vendetta or Mouse.
Yes.
Things that were written specifically as novels in a graphic format.
Yes, that's what it is. It's a novel-length comic book. But at no point was there V for Vendetta issue 1, issue 2.
Right. However, a lot of these trade paperbacks are sold and in the industry as graphic and packaged as graphic novels.
Yes.
So that's where the confusion can come in.
I always feel like the giant confusing one is Watchmen, because everyone calls that a graphic novel. I think I learned it may have been originally issues.
I don't know.
I can't remember, but there are some like that, like, it has been considered a whole piece for so long.
Right. But when I said earlier that I wasn't aware there was a difference, what I mean is, in terms of the industry and how the thing is released and then, you know, collated and everything else, there are these differences.
Yes.
But in terms of the art form itself, the person writing a comic book or drawing a comic book, they don't really approach it any differently than a person approaches
I would think not.
A graphic novel. Especially if it's a 16-issue arc or a 32-issue arc.
It is possible because because unlike with a graphic novel with comics, you have the potential, I'm guessing it doesn't come up too often, but you have the potential that you have released to the public issues when you have not finished with some of the issues in that same arc.
I suppose.
And
there's one shot.
You might be influenced by market forces that they really hated this new character I brought in. Maybe I'll kill him off.
And there's one shots and things like that.
Yeah,
but for the most part, I think it's fair to say that from the artist's perspective, there's not really a substantial difference between a comic
and a
graphic novel. Now, there is a substantial difference, however, between a comic strip and a comic book or graphic novel. I think the art of doing a comic strip is completely different. But that's an art that's fading.
Yeah.
So,
well, I think that,
because there used to be comic books that were just collections of comic strips.
Yes, I own several.
And that would be a different type of comic book than what we're talking about.
And I should say the only reason this should matter in your life, one, if you're new to reading this kind of stuff, reading comics, it's just good to know what they mean when people are talking, so you don't get really confused. Mm-hmm. Graphic novel, is that different than the comics I read or whatever? And the other one is, if you go out and you talk about it, there's going to be grognards out there. You're going to be like, technically, it was released as single issues, and it's not, you shouldn't call it a graphic novel. And knowing these terms potentially will spare you some of their bullshit.
Right.
But otherwise, yeah, it doesn't really matter.
No.
I usually say trades for everything, because here's the thing, I don't read single comic issues,
mm-hmm.
because what would they do in my house? the cat would shit on them within 3 days or something. And two, I don't care if it's a trade collection or a graphic novel. Well, because you're never going to get both. You're never going to be like, oh, did you want Hush in comic form?
Individual comics?
Or as the did you want the graphic novel version? Because it's the same thing.
Well, except some people want the cover art and the variant covers and all that nonsense.
Go for it. Leave me out of that.
But
foil covered.
One of the big advantages of reading trades instead of the individual comic books is precisely that thing where you're getting the comic book and someone says, you've got this variant cover of that comic book. Don't you want these other three variant covers? Or the arc is going to cross over into other books that you don't subscribe to, and you have to go buy it.
And that was something I found disconcerting when I first really started reading trades, is because, so I'm reading volume one of, you know, Hellblazer or whatever, and it contains Hellblazer issue 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 14, and 27.
Well, you'll skip some.
Yeah. And it's because 1 through 8 were the story, and then 9 through 13 was a separate adventure that's unrelated. 14 picked up that same story, and then much later, 27 resolved it. So that's the old story arc, but I'm like, I'm missing the ones in between.
Yeah.
And so, but that can be very convenient, rather than buying all those and being like, okay, this has nothing to do with the rest of it.
And then you've got, like, with Batman, what typically happens with Batman is, the story arc is in...
He can't bring himself to kill him, and they escape.
Batman 10 through 20, then one issue of Detective Comics, one issue of JLA, one issue of Harley Quinn, and then we're going to pick up with Batman again. It's like, oh my gosh, I don't want to have
to. And if it's a significant crossover, that they'll just include that in the trade too. So are you say, so Frank Miller has co-written a trilogy that's a new Dark Knight Returns story, Master Race or something?
Master Race is the third part of this big trilogy, I guess. Because you know
they got TV commercials for it, which I'm like, well, why would you need to do that? And second of all, I'm like, everything about, like, this is actively repelling me. Like, I might have just picked it up and been like, oh, but now, like, Frank Miller, who brought you Sin City and 300, I'm like, yeah, that guy. I had on my to-do list to tell that guy to fuck off for all of eternity, and I'm never spending a single dime on anything he's made.
You know, he did Dark Knight.
I know people love him. I'm just saying the people who love him should be ashamed of loving him.
And there was a second one called, I forget now what it was called, but that was that a long time after?
Dark Knight Returns... was the first one I remember.
Dark Knight Returns.
I was in junior high.
Then there was a second one that's kind of supposed to be like the second in the trilogy. But that, was that right after, or was that like 10 years after or something?
Oh, no.
And now this Master Race is the new one to sort of round it all out.
Which, you know, for a guy whose brain turned 80% racist after 9/11, doing a group called Master Race is an edgy move. Apparently they're this alien species, but I'm still like, come on, really?
I'm not particularly interested.
No. And seriously, like, I feel like he does not deserve any more money at this point.
Well, Dark Knight Returns was okay,
but...
Dark
Knight Returns was disconcerting. It was okay primarily because it was breaking new territory. And it was showing... That, to me, that's a point in time in comics. Dark Knight Returns is a milestone of shit that's happened. Ever since then, everything he has done is either shittier versions of Dark Knight Returns or the most racist, misogynist crap ever put to pen and paper.
Yeah, it's weird.
So I'm just done. And I'm tired of him breathing.
The Dark Knight Returns, like I said, I
got real issues.
I appreciate.
I really didn't like Sin City, in case that never came up.
No, yeah, you and I both.
Really did not like Sin City.
You and I both responded very negatively to it.
And the producer also, like, every once in a while, there'll be a lull in conversation, and we'll be like, you remember Sin City? We're like, God damn it.
Dark Knight Returns, I appreciate it for what it is. I thought it was interesting, but when I was done reading it, my feeling was, that was interesting and okay, but I don't care if I ever read it again or anything from him again.
Well, and that's part of the huge phenomenon. It sparked a movement,
I guess.
Not a movement in and of itself, not so much. I like when something happens that says, you know what, we've been operating under more strict boundaries than we've been realizing, and I think Dark Knight Returns did that. The answer to that is not, oh yeah, I'm just gonna copy that new shit you did. No, I like when we can shake things up and say, you know, you can broaden this. You can take this darker track. You can take this grittier, more realistic. You can take this all this stuff. Oh, yeah, we can. So let's just do that for 20 years. No. Like, And that's the thing. We're at the point now where people are like, I'm going to do a Superman comic where he's incorruptible and super awesome all the time. And people are going to be like, whoa. And people are now being like, that's so nouveau. Like, we should do that. What happened to you people? So, I have a lot of opinions because I've been sitting around with no opinions for a while.
I guess.
I have a lot of opinions about this and the phone game Forge of Empires, but we can't get into that now because we are over time. Thank you for joining us. It really feels like it's been more than 2 weeks. I'm so happy to be back, and I'm so happy I'm going back to work, which is a phrase you will hear me say...
Never again.
5 times in my life. I'm willing to lay down money right now. So the rest of you, go to the blog and welcome me back, themagicaltalkinghead.com. Tell me... oh, my God. If the right... person is out there listening, we're dead. Because between the stuff we said about Stephen King and the stuff we said about Frank Miller, like, somebody is going to lose their shit on us. And if you're out there, my hunch is that our listeners don't include this person, but a lot of them, like, my friends do and acquaintances include these people. So if you are out there, let us have it. I want to hear it. I seriously... and I'm not saying this to make fun of you. I want to know... I want you to explain the It Orgy to me. I want you to explain to me what it is about Stephen King's books. Because I feel like I have something of a grasp on his movies, and I think that may be part of the problem, because I haven't read any of his actual books. Also tell me that Frank Miller's not as bad as I think. Really. But go read Holy Terror first. And comment on anything else... and listen again next week, all right? And remember, update those folding chairs.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.